It is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Out. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid. A tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eye. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink. And listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
World Domain Team 10, sing 9. World Gone Man, don't sing 9. Don't draw its head. Not learn. Go with the flow now. Not gone. Let it go. I'm gone. Go with the flow now. I'm gone. Let it go.
To the New American Dream Radio Show. We're broadcasting live from Duluth, from the Jackson Mott Clark Reunion. And tonight, we welcome these special guests, Frank Cordero, Phil Ferrugio, Julius Awafong, Karen Kitkowski, Michael Annis, and Rachel Finley. And we have had a very nice introduction to the show from Patrick Donahoe. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Denver, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Duluth, in Des Moines, in Port Orange, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and wherever you are. Our first guest of the night is Phil Ferrugio. And I spoke to him recently, and here we go.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites, here's Phil Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid!
In the season of Thanksgiving, let me, as a writer, offer a little bit of thanks to the many great people that we have interviewed on our radio show, Chuck and I, It's the Empire, Stupid, but also to the many great writers that 90% of the mainstream population don't even know about. Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, lately Chris Hedges, Ralph Nader. There are so many of these great people. Robert Parry, let me just name the sites that people can go to. Okay, World News Trust is a really good site. Global Research, Center for Globalization is a great site for people to go to. Consortium News, Nation of Change, okay, Dissident Voice, Counterpunch, Truth Dig. There are so many of these really great websites that post. Tom Dispatch is another one who posts a lot of really interesting, important, essential writers that the mainstream will not ever print or post. And if you go to these sites, the ones I mentioned, and read some of these writers, you'll see that we have a lot to be thankful for without even understanding it, because the mainstream media is corrupt. The mainstream media is made up of hypocrites, phonies, ambitious people that are on steroids, and they don't really speak the truth. And going to these websites, you'll hear from writers who do speak the truth. The Intercept is another great site that I recommend. They have some really good news reporting. So check these sites out over the Thanksgiving holidays and the Christmas holidays, and read what a lot of these great writers are saying. I'm just one little speck of sand in a desert of interesting people. Thank you.
All right. Well, now our recommended list for the week. The Corbett Report, How Do We Counter Military Worship? Also recommended, John Barber's film, The American Media and the Second Assassination of John F. Kennedy, now available on Amazon. Also recommended, False Flag Weekly News, every Friday morning on YouTube with Kevin Barrett and Tony Hall. Also, Truth Stream Media. Also, the 5th Annual JFK Assassination Conference, Exposing Deadly Secrets, this weekend in Dallas. Go to jamesbetzer.blogspot.com for details. And I would like to let you know that the first edition of Penn Magazine is now online at pennmagazine.us. In this inaugural issue, we have many stories about the guests of the New American Dream radio show. Mickey Z, Richard Flamer, Jim Fetzer, Frank Cordero, Phil Perugio, Karen Kitkowski, Anthony Rayson. We invite you to take a look. PennMagazine.us. And also, in the now, Anisi Naouya on YouTube, Russia just turned a bunch of journalists into enemy spies. And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. And now The Americans. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TB towns, while the world wails, fist clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house afire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a deep U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been since 9/11 accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. President of the United States of America, Cosmo Nutt, sat at his big desk in his giant office, staring at his camo phone. He held the phone far away at arm's length to take a selfie of himself with his Russian teddy bear sent to him by Benjamin Netanyahu. He then walked down the long marble steps round and round to the award ceremony. Cosmo Nutt seated himself on the little stage set up. At just the right time, right when he was supposed to, he got up, grabbed a Medal of Freedom from the table full of medals and freedom, and placed it over the head of Al Franken, the Medal of Freedom for American Type Ethics. Nutt then placed the same Medal of Freedom over the head of Charlie Rose after someone put down a little step stool for him to stand on. He then kissed Rose and Franken on both cheeks, and they sat down. Nutt walked to the Medal of Freedom table and grabbed two more, and this time placed them around the necks and shoulders of Michael Moore and Garrison Keillor and John Stewart. Medals of Freedom for limited hangout and don't say nothing but nothing about 9/11 ever. President Nutt then awarded the Medal of Freedom to Roger Goodell, Commissioner of the National Football League, for anything the military says is the truth. Anything the military wants, it gets, even if the military is nothing but a bunch of thugs and murderers, and all this has nothing to do with protecting anyone's freedom. In fact, it has everything to do with propaganda and taking everyone's freedom away. And all the Medal of Freedom Award winners gathered on stage around President Cosmo Nutt, and Nutt held out his phone and took a selfie of them all. "Say Mazel Tov, everybody," said President Cosmo Nutt. "Mazel Tov!" The next guest of the evening is Rachel Finley. And Rachel was kind enough to record a poem that's specially for Thanksgiving. And here we go.
Hi, once again, I am Rachel Finley.
Find me on Facebook as Rachel Flow Diva Finley, on Instagram and Twitter at Flow Diva Flow. And I am a member of Chaos Theory, a poet's collective, which you can find on all social media as The Chaos Theory Online. The poem I'm sharing this week is a short one. The holiday season tends to be a difficult time for a lot of people, and it could be easy to slip back into old habits. So I think this is an appropriate poem for this week. It all started because someone asked me to write a poem that started with the words, "A cup found in a stairwell." A cup found in a stairwell at the parking garage. It smelt of beer, warm piss, and loneliness. The harder I run, the less ground I cover. All roads lead back here to the familiar stench of wino dreams and street kid realities. I found a cup in a stairwell, and it looked a lot like me, lost at the bottom of a bottle, searching for the stairway out, riding the escalator further down, drowning in my unfulfilled dreams in a gut full of bourbon, an eye full of tears, a life full of nightmares. I keep waiting for a break, a landing on the staircase, a place to catch my breath. But life doesn't take a break, and this bottle is slowing me down. It's so much harder to take that next step on unsure legs with foggy eyes. One more sip to clear the vision. The hair of the dog to strengthen the legs. Sweet sangria to lubricate the slip and slide I ride down to the pit of my own personal hell. Adrift in a sea of Bloody Mary, alone in the stairwell of a parking garage. A cup found me and called me Ken. Old familiar friend. Thank you.
CWG Press, a small press with big ideas.
Chuck Gregory is the publisher of CWG Press. He founded it in 2006 and has published 26 books so far.
CWG Press, small but mighty, fighting for the world, taking on the empire.
CWG Press authors include Corbin Fowler, Mickey Z, Bruce Davis, and Mike Polichuk.
I'm Chuck Gregory, and I'd like to describe a recent edition from a member of the audience by my father, Wayne L. Gregory. Dad penned his memories of over 100 actors and actresses, theater names we all recognize, remembering live performances he'd seen in a span of over 50 years. Currently, CWG Press is publishing the Geronimo's Revenge trilogy by my co-host, Mike Polichuk. The second book, Crusher in Wonderland, will be available at as of October 2, 2017.
You are in the middle of an American-Russian novel. You better believe it. All you need is more vodka. And the next time you are sitting at the Thanksgiving adult big table and your brother-in-law tries to send you to Siberia with a roll of his eyes, we'll take a few books with you from CWG Press. So here we go. Scooch up to the samovar with a nice warm drink in your hands, maybe keep your hat and boots on, and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice while you read something from CWG Press.
Okay, once again, this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and I think we may have finally gotten my co-host, Mike Polichuk, on the line with us. So welcome to the show, Mike. And we're sorry you missed the opening song because it was just fantastic. And Phil and Rachel were also very good. So anyhow, we once again, I'm here broadcasting from Park Point in Duluth. And I'm at the Jackson Mott Clark family reunion, which the big part of the event has finished, and a lot of people have headed out. But we've been putting on this reunion every year for 156 years. The first one was in 1861, and It's quite a tradition. I'm really lucky to be part of this family. I had hoped to get Patrick Donahoe to sing to us a little bit more, but he's entertaining the few guests that remain, and he's over in another room. So, we're kind of on our own here. Mike, how was your Thanksgiving?
Just fine. We had kids come from Minneapolis. How far are we into this? Tell me what happened with the show so far. I missed, again, Skype. I just couldn't. It just didn't work for me. What's going on with this?
Well, basically, Mike, we're down. We've already played the CWG Press ad, and we're into the time where we try to figure out what happens until the end of the hour. But we're glad that I was finally able to add you to the show, and hopefully the rest of it will go a little bit better technically.
Have we gone into any of my stuff, or are we past number 4 on the script?
We're on number 8, Mike.
We're
doing number 8 right now.
Okay. So we went all through the script and up to number 8.
That is correct. Yes, we did everything in order. I read your parts, and we are down here. And, hey, sometimes it happens that way. We really need to get your Skype to work because I don't like having to do the whole first segment by myself. But
number 8 says Chuck's other song. Do you have another song?
No, I don't have another song because I thought Patrick was going to sing for us. But then he went and decided to play for everybody else. And I'm sitting here not knowing what to do except for talk to you. So, here we are.
Yeah, we're doing fine here in Saginaw. You know, with I know people don't want to listen to this, but the Skype thing, why doesn't is that just my problem here?
It seems to be an issue with yours. I don't know why it just refuses to connect to you. And I even have then I had trouble calling you on the phone too. So that we had double trouble.
Okay.
Ended up with your voicemail message in the middle of Phil's and Rachel's segments, but it's okay. You could hear it anyway. And you missed a very powerful poem from Rachel, and a good segment from Phil. And you may hear some noise in the background here, because there are some kids that they came in and listened to Patrick's song at the beginning, and I'll tell you, their attention was rapt. They were just sitting there, you know, listening and being very good. Of course, that didn't last long after the song. But
what do we got in the next half hour, Chuck? We got Frank Cordero coming up, right?
Okay.
And in the next, you talked to Frank this afternoon, and we're going to try and connect with Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson, Virginia. And it's always she always comes on Thanksgiving night, and she usually she doesn't miss on Thanksgiving night. That's kind of, we appreciate that, her going live, even with a house full of guests probably, but that's pretty cool. Oh, there we go.
Okay, well, the station.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We live in a world where children are most often unprotected and preyed upon in the most horrific ways. Children who grow up to tell their stories. It is time for the world to listen. My name is Veni Kosius. I am a cult and child abuse survivor turned thriver. From religious abuse to abuses enacted in the youth reform system to abusive government-funded programs and more, I am bringing you trauma survival stories which the mainstream media rarely covers. Support freedomslips.com and tune into my show, Survivor Voices, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember, whatever you do to the least among you, you do unto yourselves.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from the Des Moines Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa. Frank is a former Catholic priest. He founded the Des Moines Catholic Worker, and he lives there. He works with the homeless. He's also a former federal prisoner for peace. And now Frank Cordero talking with Chuck Gregory in Des Moines, Iowa.
Frank,
how you doing?
I'm real good. We've had a great reunion up here.
Did you get to see Michael and fulfill the rest of your trip?
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. It was a great time having you. I'm glad you guys made it.
Well, thank you, Frank. We had a great time there.
Wonderful. So where are we at? Are you doing another show on today or Thanksgiving?
Yes, I am.
Well, luckily on Thanksgiving Day in the recent history, we do not open up. In fact, we're closed right now. Most of the people part of the community are with their families. It's the one holiday that we don't feel guilty not feeding folks because there's tons of options for people to go get Thanksgiving meals at other places. So right now I'm over here at the house and I'm the scene. I walk through the alley and I'm cooking the meat for tomorrow's meal. I'm on duty at 3 o'clock, so I've got to have something going. So that's what I'm doing. And it's a laid back day. We're just like the rest of us, like everybody else, trying to take a breather. Things haven't changed much here. The situation, Jess and Ruby are still out and about, not connected with us or anyone that we know of, on their own. Still no indictment that we know of. We hear, as you saw, we pick up the daily routine, the weekly routine of opening up and meeting folks, and we're, our own local campaign is at the end of December, we're going to be Christmas Day, the Christmas week on the 28th, the Feast of the Holy Innocents. We're going to be doing a direct action and witness at our armed drone command. That kind of catchy, you know. Herod killed the children. The drone command kills them too. You know, celebrate Christmas, shut down this drone command. We're looking forward to that, maybe starting a yearly tradition. And again, as I've said before, we're not heading to Omaha. This is like we've been doing this for over 30 years, 35 years. You're just not going this year because not that it doesn't need someone there, but there's just no good reason to leave Des Moines.
Right.
When today they have an armed drone command killing people in the Middle East, right on the south side of Des Moines, from space. So we're doing that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's just Christmas is a loaded time for lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's again trying to wrestle with the infant narratives and stories about Jesus, his birth, and what they pertain for his adult life, because those are what the texts were written for. And even though they're nice little stories, we're all very familiar with them, there's really a biting edge to each one of them. And the ugly hand of the state is certainly close at hand. And in Matthew's gospel, the ugly hand of the state kills the innocent children of Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inevitable. The power always seeks to protect itself, and in the process, what we call today collateral damage, what the world calls innocent people, die. And there's just no good way of getting around it. This sort of stuff is happening again all the time. And this is the thing that just gets me. Of the major religions in the world, there are two, one completely and the other one partially, completely abdicate their whole premise of their faith for empire, the U.S. empire. So let me begin. One of the world religions is what we call today modern Judaism. All right. Modern Judaism has 14 million people. It's not a lot of people, but 85% of them all live in either the United States or Israel. Well, folks, the U.S. is less than 5% of the world's population. Israel's hardly worth mentioning. So 5% of the world's population, the world Jewish faith, 85% of them reside in the U.S. or Israel. There's no other countries more off the base, more out of control, more at odds with their best selves than the United States and Israel. Neither one of us represent the tradition of Judaism or the other faith we represent, Christianity, a damn good at all. And the Christians in the U.S., we're only like 4% of the world's population, so we're not that big of the population of Christianity. But we're the only set of Christians in a nation that believe Jesus is pro-rich, pro-war, and pro-USA. So what I'm trying to say is, you and I live in this god-awful country in which the most basic traditions that we brought to America, the natives didn't bring this, Christianity and Judaism, and both of them are polluted so badly that we, people of faith, put our blessings on this empire every year and thank God for our blessings, and this is crazy. It's just absolute crazy. You know this. I know this. Most of us who want to be honest know this. And it's a struggle to you know, keep that focus and be honest about it and then try to do something about it. Not a lot. Nobody's going to do a lot. The Catholic Worker is a big on don't get over doing a lot because we're not meant to do a lot. However, we're not meant to do nothing. We're meant to do something. And we're meant to put our lives on the line for what we do. And this Thanksgiving is a hollow thing if some of us in America don't start telling our fellow Americans the truth and trying to trying to change things at a personal level, at personal cost. I'm a constant believer in that. And the works of mercy are for me. You've been here. So you know what the setup is. I got a house where I do the peace and justice work. But when I cross over to that alley, that the real work that keeps me rooted and gives me meaning in life is this day-to-day soup line thing. It's the most real thing I have.
Well, yeah. You know, when you're doing that, you're helping the people that really need it.
I think so. Trying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, it was so much of a blessing to see you and your wife. It was just a hoot. And then I hope you had a great time with Michael Polacek, because two people in the world should be meeting each other. You two should, because you work so well together on the internet and in the radio world. So, and you, you finally get to meet the guy who writes all those crazy stories and books. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a great trip.
So when you call out here, you'll have a little more sense of what's going on.
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Frank.
God bless, brother. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Occupy Dealey Plaza. That's where it all began. November 22nd, 1963, about 12:30 p.m. Filled Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking, and let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers and their sniper rifles and double secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know, we know, what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know, this is America. Our next guest of the show is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski was stationed at the Pentagon as a lieutenant colonel, as a Pentagon advisor, a consultant, a worker when the building was attacked by something, perhaps a cruise missile, on September 11, 2001. She's also a radio show host, or was. She ran for Congress, and she lives in Mount Jackson, Virginia. And we're going to try to get in contact right now with Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson.
Hello.
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and we wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and you're on the air.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Yeah, this is always a great day, and it seems like for the past few years I've had the Thanksgiving slot, which is great. But so I'm going to talk about, you know, Thanksgiving and gratitude, because that's what this day is kind of about. And, you know, like a lot of people, had family together, and of course, very peaceful, which is not like a lot of families, I'm sure. Not all Thanksgivings is kind of a running joke about, you know, Thanksgivings bringing people together that really might rather not be together for some reason, political reasons and other things. But the Thanksgiving I had today was, you know, really good. Everybody on their best behavior, and very blessed and very, you know, wonderful, like they're supposed to be. And we don't do this every Thanksgiving, but this Thanksgiving we did the thing where you go around the table and everybody says something that they're grateful for, and we did that. And we've done it before. Of course, there's a lot of jokesters, believe it or not, in my family, a lot of people that make a lot of jokes. And usually the going around the table is kind of humorous and not really too heavy. Nobody gets emotional. But this time it was, for some reason, and I don't really know why, but I guess people were speaking from the heart a little bit more than maybe they normally do. And, of course, we had people of all different ages, and it was very interesting and kind of emotional to hear all the different things that people were grateful for, and people were serious about it. And, of course, you know, heartwarming also, a few tears, which is unusual for our Thanksgivings, but they were happy tears. So everybody was kind of, recognized of all the different generations. You know, everybody had some really important things to be grateful for. And, of course, what were they? Mainly grateful for the people around them, the people in their lives. And I think sincerely so, too, not just like a card or a bumper sticker. They truly meant it. So that was good. And then after Thanksgiving, after the meal and the cleanup, I was looking at catching up on the email and stuff, and I found an email from one of my prepper, you know, apocalyptic world coming to an end, you have to be prepared. It sounds very opposite of Thanksgiving. And her feature article, of course, because it's Thanksgiving, had to do with, you know, how gratitude, making it a part of everything that you do and in your everyday life, helps you in your development of resiliency, which, of course, fits in with the whole survival and prepper and readiness theme, but also important for just life in general and happiness and that kind of thing and joy. So, it fit right in. And then I'm thinking to take this thought just a little bit further, about the news, of course, as I always think about the news, like so many of us do. One of the big things that is filling up the news, which I wish it wasn't, but it is, the Me Too thing. But it's not Me Too, I'm grateful. It's Me Too, I was sexually harassed 40 years ago, 20 years ago, yesterday, I don't know. It's troublesome to hear these painful stories that are coming out from people who were harmed in some way. And they were harmed. I mean, if they believe it happened, if they're telling the truth, obviously they were harmed. So, what, you know, you, how could, you know, how can, you know, it's very, they're bringing up something not that's gratitude-driven, but that's pain-driven, and that's basically the opposite of gratitude, which is you owe me something, which is the opposite of gratitude. You owe me. Not, I have this thing that I'm not worthy, I don't deserve it, I'm so happy and grateful and blessed. But no, you owe me. You screwed me over years ago, yesterday, I don't know when. And I didn't say anything about it, or maybe I did, but whatever it is, I'm still holding this grudge, and you owe me an apology, and you owe me something because I'm feeling bad. Now that, to me, you know, is it that we're growing a whole bunch of generations of people, and I hope this is not true, but maybe we are, and I don't have evidence in my own Thanksgiving dining table because I had people of all generations, and they all knew how to be grateful, but in fact, I wonder, you know, what that's telling us. The Me Too thing. Well, of course they're hurt. But how do you get over that? Well, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think other people can fix stuff that happened to you. I honestly don't think that. I think you have to fix it yourself. And part of how you fix it is you have to, I think gratitude comes into play. Happiness is not going to be found by, accusing people. And I don't mean just accusing them, because it may be a valid accusation. But to demand of someone else something, I think that's kind of the wrong approach. And I think Thanksgiving tells us a better approach, a different approach, one of gratitude, and then I think hand-in-hand with that, forgiveness. But then looking at it from the point of view of all these guys in the media right now, like Charlie Rose, for gosh sakes, that's the latest one that I've heard. It's like Charlie Rose, he's a harasser, he's a nasty old man. Okay, he's not living a life of gratitude either, because the life of gratitude is I'm not worthy. The life these guys seem to be living, and some of the things that they're doing, is like, you owe me. You owe me. I'm a powerful guy. You owe me something. Well, this is the same thing there 40 years later when you say, hey, you know, me too. You know, you owe me an apology. If we all go around and everything that about our lives is, you owe me something. You owe me an apology. You owe me some sort of favor, sexual or otherwise, because of who I am or who I think I am. This is not the recipe. This is not the recipe for success. So I think Thanksgiving, this idea of gratitude, it has so many applications, and so many healing properties that could come into play if we actually think about it, and not just, of course, on Thanksgiving, but to think about kind of an attitude of gratitude. Because, and I mean, I know that's a thing that people say, but I'm thinking that a lot of this unhappiness that people have with how they're treated by other people, and hey, we could go into Black Lives Matter and white privilege. You know, let's do it. Let's jump right in there, because you owe me is not going to get anybody any happiness, and it's not going to get justice. It's not going to make you feel better. It's not going to stop bad things from happening. So, you know, I think maybe at Thanksgiving, maybe one day out of the year, we can step back and say, maybe you don't owe me anything. And maybe I'm going to be grateful, you know, that I'm here, you know, and that I'm alive and that I've got a couple friends, you know, and that maybe I ate something today. I'm going to be thankful for that. And I think that's going to be a much better prescription for our society. Now, me saying that doesn't make it happen, but I wonder if we might be able to try it, because the you owe me thing on both sides, victim and the one who's conducting the offense, years go by, we let it boil up, everybody's mad, you've got something I don't have, I want it, you owe me it, not happy, not productive. Doesn't lead to joy. Okay. And it's not really our generation. I'm not going to blame it on the past couple of generations. You know, it's not the millennials. It's not the little kids that got the trophies. It's really an attitude that anybody can adopt in their life right away. Thanksgiving is one where I thought about it today and I saw it in action. I wondered if I could apply it to some of those larger issues that consume us that we're all interested in. And absolutely, it applies. So anyway, that would be what I learned today at Thanksgiving. I think it's really a cool holiday, and it's a lot of fun. And thinking about gratitude is probably one of the most powerful things that we can do to make ourselves a little bit happier and a little bit better, and to kind of help and bless the other people around us, and even possibly, just maybe, I hope, our whole society. So that would be kind of my message for today on Thanksgiving.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for joining us on the show tonight. And yes, you are one of our designated Thanksgiving guests, just because you're always on the fourth week. But
it works out that way.
It just works that way. But I'm really glad that you are, because you always seem to have a nice positive message for us on Thanksgiving. And God knows,
at least on Thanksgiving,
positive messages, you know. The other ones are good too, but you know, we need these once in a while.
Yes, it is good. It's good. And then I'll go back to my mean old self in a month about something in the news that drove me crazy.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
But really, we're so lucky to have you on our show month after month, and I always look forward to hearing what you have to say. There's always something pretty darn interesting, and
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm happy. I'm glad to do it. It's always fun for me too.
Okay. Well, you have a real happy Thanksgiving, what's left of it, and we look forward to talking to you again next month.
All right, wonderful. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all the listeners.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was cool, Chuck.
That was cool.
In our next half hour, we'll have Julius Owlfong. And Julius sends along this note about what he's going to talk about. Why are black Africans still traded into slavery? What can be done to curb this? This show elaborates on the causes and some steps to put an end to this inhuman, outdated practice. And we'll also hear from Michael Annis. Michael will be speaking to us from Denver. Michael is the executive editor of Howling Dog Press. He's also a poet and an activist. And he'll be speaking to us also on Thanksgiving. And we do appreciate these folks for taking time to talk to us on Thanksgiving. And that's all I got, Chuck. You're on Park Point. You're Duluth.
That's
is it
right.
Windy and cold?
It's been a little windy, but yeah, not too bad.
Really you got some actual Minnesota weather yesterday. Today it's too warm.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
anti-aircraft gun pointed to action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 years ago.
General Quarters, all hands at your battle stations.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Bam! Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday Night Firing Lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Julius Awafong. Julius Awafong joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius sends this note along about what he's going to talk about. Why are black Africans still traded into slavery? What can be done to curb this? This show elaborates on the causes and some steps to put an end to this inhumane, outdated practice. And now Julius Awafong from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Good evening, Joe. Good evening, Mike. Good evening, our listeners. What has been really traumatizing this week, or starting from last week, has been this phenomenon of slavery of black Africans that's taking place in Libya. You see, there has been an outcry against this outrageous slavery, and it's so shocking that in the 21st century, we still find such a behavior in human beings. But it must be said that black Africans have been, slavery even began with the Arab world, you know, when it came to Africa in the 14th century. They started dealing in slavery even before Europeans came in. So it's not strange that Arabs are still very more interested in carrying out the slavery activities, because it's been their work for a very long time. But there's a certain African, a Cameroonian called Edwin Boye, who gave out 10 elements, which according to him, if put in place, then we can be able to save our people, we can be able to tackle slavery, its causes, its consequences, and put Africa back on rail. He starts by talking about saying that Africa must cut off the economic and political umbilical cord with their colonial or slave masters, especially in Europe. According to him, this is because operating from a position of weakness, the resurgent African nations were forced into signing pacts and treaties, committing themselves to allow their natural resources to be ravaged in perpetuity by Europe. Another point which he evokes is the fact that the African Union must take a firm position on the subject matter after useful brainstorming. The African Union must make themselves relevant to their people rather than give the impression that their main job is to loot and to tear into pieces the resources of their nations. Sometimes one is even tempted to think that these heads of state are like the lobbyist and robot that spread the tentacles of interest of their historical slave masters over the continent. Some of them, some at times we call them comprador bourgeoisies, that is, people put in place not as leaders to bring their continent out of the quagmire in which we find ourselves, but as people who are there to serve the interests of the European nations. The third point he raises is the fact that Africa, that covers more than 20% of the exposed land surface of the earth and hosts about 30% of or more of useful population of the world, has no seat in the major international organizations such as the United Nations. Africa has got 54 nations and more, yet no voice anywhere. This explains why every decision from the international institution is forced down her throat, irrespective of how she feels. How can Africa defend herself if she is internationally given a slave status? The fourth point he raises is the fact that Africa must sue all those multinationals, economic institutions that ravage her natural resources, making her children wander about like scavengers. Ivory Coast, for instance, gets less than 1% of the benefits from the cocoa she produces. This is the reason why they move out in wretchedness for survival. Congo and the Central African Republic are kept perpetually in war in order for the Western exploiters for their mineral resources, in order for the Westerners to exploit their mineral resources and do their job. The collection of their raw material also cannot be push aside. Let us not mention a banana republic like the Republic of Cameroon that cannot as much as name anyone into economic office without consulting her real government that directs them from Paris. All this needs an immediate overhaul, because this is the underlying reason for which their citizens dare into the unknown, thereby ending up as slaves. The fifth point he raises is the fact that to stop slavery in Africa, leaders of France, leaders of the USA, and the accomplices in the that's NATO. He's talking about NATO here, who plotted to kill the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi in order to set the scene that we have today, must be called to order. So only when would others prevented from doing so in the future? When the leaders of some nations murder their colleagues of other sovereign nations and not as much as brought to the International Criminal Tribunal for any hearing, it simply foments the scenario like that we are now witnessing. The sixth point is that the African Union must oblige her member states to foster educational advancement of her citizens. These two should be the major job of UNICEF and the United Nations, as he tries to fix it. So most conflict areas and nations in the world are those with very geometric rates of illiteracy. Once people cannot learn a trade, surf around the world and make a living, they are vulnerable to all forms of disaster. The northeastern part of Nigeria, as well as the northern part of Cameroon, where Boko Haram has made a home, and of course Libya, are vivid examples. He brings up the seventh point when he talks about the Western cultural imperialism and the fact that it should be given a new look. Africans have been brainwashed into believing that they are inferior even in the things that make them to be essentially who they are. Many have given into this insanity. That's why some of us really love people like the late Thomas Sankara, J.J. Rawlings, and Obasanjo, amongst others, because they remain African even in the high offices. Take a look at the cream of African leaders, wherever they go. They appear always clad in some Western or Arabic fabric, denying to identify even with such, with the European looks. They keep on the African looks wherever they go. You can look at the African male youth appearing in some rags just because one culture has imposed it. Well, I mean, that's what Joseph might call soft power. That's African youths have allowed themselves to thinking that, or into thinking that appearing in a Western mood, that is going in for the Western product, makes them more modern than, or makes them modern, while those who stay with the African attire, the African look, the African culture appear to be primitive. So the eighth point here raises the fact that the IMF must reconsider her economic position and engagement with African, because a lot of it is actually meant to keep Africa where she is. The economists know this better. The IMF should go deeper into analyzing the economic ties her heavyweight member states have with Africa. It is absurd, for instance, that 14 African nations pay a slave tax to France, annually called the colonial tax, that she devalues and is the sole responsibility, or is the only person responsible for their monetary policy and production. I mean, this is a tip of the iceberg, because what the IMF allows the multinationals, I mean, European multinationals, especially that of France, to do in Africa has no logical or moral justification. The ninth point he talks of is the fact that Africa must wake up. Africa produces rice, but goes to buy rice from Asia. She produces cars, but dies after French, Belgian, American, and Italian cars. I mean, Nigeria produces cars. This is insane, he says. What become of those African economists? I know a few sharp Africans like Malela in South Africa and the Malens William of Sierra Leone who are engaged in this already. Africa must patronize herself and her values and talk about them. I dare not forget Clarice Kamwa of the Republic of Cameroon and Patrick Beko of Congo. When catastrophe strikes in Africa, instead of letting anyone cry out, the Africans must do so. The tenth point is Africa must stand up and reject what is not acceptable within her frontiers, even if a few of her sons and daughters have fallen. These far from give us pride and makes us into double slavery, mental slavery. Such include homosexual culture and the culture of death manifested in varied forms, such as false attempts to present abortion as an inalienable human right, or hypocritical offer of the murder of the old and the terminally ill, or legitimate medical assistance. So those are the points that are put in place by Boyer in order to ask African leaders his own contribution into ending slavery. And we think that this is so funny because no matter the preaching, no matter what people say, African leaders don't seem to hit to all this. All they are interested in is to embezzle, make money for themselves, send their children to Ivy League schools in the West, and thinking about how to replace their children or their wives, like what just happened in Zimbabwe when Mugabe wanted to replace himself with the wife as the head of state of Zimbabwe. Luckily enough, Zimbabweans were very smart and came out to say power is not sexually transmitted, it is elected in the ballot. Thank you so much, Chok. Happy Thanksgiving to the American family. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
And now, from the Target and Walmart, Leonard Peltier, Ward Churchill, Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Russell Means, Dennis Banks, Thanksgiving Holiday Card Collection. Custer died for your sins. Some selections from the new collection, a card designed with you in mind. If we must die, we die defending our rights. They still don't want to admit to the world that this isn't the best and the fairest and the most equal justice system, and that they are guilty of railroading people into jail. They don't want to or never will admit these things.
A political prisoner is someone who is out fighting for his or her political people's rights and freedom and is imprisoned for that alone. As far as we could determine, white culture, if it existed, depended primarily upon the exploitation of land, people, and life itself. It relied upon novelties and fads to provide an appearance of change, but it was basically an economic Darwinism that destroyed rather than created. The white man knows how to make everything, but he does not know how to distribute it.
In those days, it was not illegal to kill an Indian. If you killed an Indian, you'd be very unfortunate if you got probation. Most of them were released immediately. When the oppressors succeed with their illegal thefts and depredations, it's called colonialism. When their efforts to colonize indigenous peoples are met with resistance or anything but abject surrender, it's called war. When the colonized peoples attempt to resist their oppressions and defend themselves, we're called criminals. When you kill 500,000 children in order to impose your will on other countries, then you shouldn't be surprised when somebody responds in kind.
Some selections from the new Target and Walmart, Leonard Peltier, Ward Churchill, Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Russell Means, Dennis Banks, Thanksgiving Holiday Card Collection. Custer died for your sins. A card designed with you in mind.
Our next guest of the show is Michael Annis. Michael Annis founded Howling Dog Press on money from the change jar in 1981. He was fervently pissed about at the powers that be then. With years added on to his work at Howling Dog, he is presently frenetically livid about this toxic trauma we call a free nation governed by a free people. Where are the real poets, he ponders, the ones with something to say and unafraid to say it? Graduating from an MFA program doesn't automatically equate to force for the empowerment of language and culture. In fact, it quite often unfolds the polar opposite. He says, if you're thinking of leaving a footprint, leave it in language. Leave it within the locus of the psyche, where all revolution ultimately manifests. But if you're planning on using an MFA program to show how to go about it, time now to hang up your keyboard back in the closet. Language is alive, breathes its own dynamism, determines its own orgasm, and when you are lucky, her pleasure becomes yours. If you don't understand that, you're not in a marriage, you're chasing after a whore. He often reflects on the notion that most perception is a slave of belief, and the language commonly generated in this paradigm is language chained to superstition and ignorance. He believes his mission is to destroy the chains that enforce this imprisonment. And now Michael Annis from Denver, Colorado.
Well, hi, Chuck, again, and hi, Mike, and happy Thanksgiving. I'm glad to be back. It's been a long time. I've missed being on the program. And what I decided might be particularly appropriate for today was to read a response or an extension, perhaps, to the great William Burroughs' Thanksgiving Day, November 28th, 1986, Thanksgiving prayer, which was written and recorded by Burroughs back then and has become a classic. For those who don't know who Burroughs is, in my opinion, and this is always my opinion only, he was perhaps the single greatest American writer, novelist anyway, story writer of the 20th century. And that opinion is shared by people such as Norman Mailer and William Gibson. William Gibson attributes Burroughs as being a mentor, as I do. He's probably the most influential person literary-wise in my life, and I feel like I owe a great debt to him as far as I was fortunate enough to know him and to be the first to publish what later became his Interzone manuscript, a long-lost manuscript that was ultimately found at in a closet at Columbia University. 1989, I did a tribute to him, Stiletto One, A Ship of Fools, where I published that work, six short stories that, like I say, had just disappeared, were lost. But this piece, Thanksgiving Day, November 28th, 1986, by William Burroughs.
Thanksgiving Day, November 28th, 1986. Thanks for the wild turkey and passenger pigeons destined to be shit out through wholesome American guts. Thanks for a continent to despoil and poison. Thanks for Indians to provide a modicum of challenge and danger. Thanks for vast herds of bison to kill and skin, leaving the carcasses to rot. Thanks for bounties on wolves and coyotes. Thanks for the American dream to vulgarize and falsify until the bare lies shine through. Thanks for the KKK for nigger killing lawmen feeding their nachos. For decent church going women with their mean, pinched, bitter, evil faces. Thanks for killer queer for Christ stickers. Thanks for laboratory AIDS. Thanks for prohibition and the war against drugs. Thanks for a country where nobody is allowed to mind his own business. Thanks for a nation of finks. Yes, thanks for all the memories. All right, let's see your arms. You always were a headache, and you always were a bore. Thanks for the last and greatest betrayal of the last and greatest of human dreams.
Nobody in particular and everybody in general, all things possible exist. Thanksgiving Day, November 23rd, 2017. Thanks for corporate cannibalism, where the media despoils the minds and poisons the hearts of the willfully ignorant. Thanks for human-generated climate cataclysm. We have grown bored of this place, except for the money we can make off of it. Thanks for planet-murdering empire, for all the successions of wars to end all war. Thanks for finally making the USA a third-world country. We will be better human beings for it. Thanks for dogs and cats and goldfish and hamsters. Thanks for animals that increase our wealth and make us feel good. Thanks for killing off all those species we can't put a collar on and tame. Thanks for blessing and empowering human wisdom and knowledge so we can perfect our propaganda machines to eradicate all wisdom and knowledge. Thanks for finally giving them, the KKK, an equal opportunity to rule in our government. Thanks for a world held hostage to nuclear power by a madman whose nervously twitching ego hovers over the fire button that keeps his omnipotent authority intact. Thanks for churches hoisting the skull and cross-boned black flag, plundering lost treasures in wallets of the poor. Thanks to lynch mobs, pogroms, concentration camps, and holocausts that show undesirables that we mean business. Thanks for flu, Ebola, polio, AIDS, plague, etc., all declared a curse and judgment from God. Thanks for Merck and Bayer, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and the other legal drug pushers who move a sickened population into more elaborate and extensive manifestations of sickness and dependency. Thanks for the NSA, the FBI, the CIA, and the neighborhood snitch peering out from behind her curtains. Thanks for teaching our children to bully, spy upon, rat out, and betray anyone who appears unusual. Thanks for Monsanto, Kraft, Coke, and the rest of the poison manufacturers. What were we to do without cancer, diabetes, birth defects, and degenerative diseases to keep our minds occupied in a world of near worthless aspirations? Thanks for ideologies, superstitions, and dogmas that keep human beings blind and deaf to the beauty of their own loves and lives, that they may not recognize what a miraculous single event of a place that this world is and probably always will be in the context of the universe.
Wow, that was very powerful, Michael. Thank you.
Sure, man. I was to be able to do it really good.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
We live in a world where children are most often unprotected and preyed upon in the most horrific ways. Children who grow up to tell their stories. It is time for the world to listen. My name is Veni Kosius. I am a cult and child abuse survivor turned thriver. From religious abuse to abuses enacted in the youth reform system to abusive government-funded programs and more, I am bringing you trauma survival stories which the mainstream media rarely covers. Support freedomslips.com and tune into my show, Survivor Voices, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember, whatever you do to the least among you, you do unto yourselves.
Alert. 090-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0917-0
message. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, your coin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a letter in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some messages we've received during the show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. From Bob Belcher, we hear the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court asked judges Monday to authorize an investigation of reported human rights abuses in Afghanistan, including allegations of rape and torture by U.S. military and CIA. The announcement marked the first time ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda has gone after Americans for alleged war crimes, and it sets up a possible showdown with Washington. The United States is not a member state of the court, but its nationals can be charged with crimes committed in countries that are members.
And this from Tina Belcher. This is just more hope for dopes. They will only be removed by force or financial disaster. Fear not, all things shall come to pass, but rarely can they be predicted. However, one can hope and pray that one day we will eventually witness real justice, and these filthy warmongers and dope peddlers. I couldn't believe it when I heard them blaming the Taliban on the increase of poppy production that has swept this war-wearied nation of soup on someone's TV last night. We know who is cashing in on that poison.
From Gene Belcher, this. I saw the poppy propaganda, too, and had to laugh. Who are they trying to kid? To keep from crying. Just like NAM and Air America, South America, Iran-Contra, CIA-headed projects and funding.
Now from Linda Belcher, just the attack alone on Afghanistan constitutes a war crime in that it was based on a total lie that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11. It's pretty easy to get away with war crimes when you have a population in the USA generally with a critical mentality of a log of wood.
From Louise Belcher, alleged war crimes? Ha, what a joke.
And from Bob Belcher, Bush Jr. and Obama signed into law that the U.S. justice system, under principles of the U.S. Constitution, supersedes all international legalities in regards to questioning the integrity of any American servicemen or political leaders. Therefore, the dubbed, W that is, Hague Invasion Act authorizes the U.S. military to invade the Netherlands by force in order to rescue any American being detained and scrutinized by proceedings of the ICC. This farce has barred any actions that the Netherlands would be willing to engage in with respect to its allied relationship with the U.S., let alone the obvious racist nature for whom they have prosecuted in the past. The U.S. isn't called a superpower for nothing.
Tina Belcher, the decision which will come out from the ICC next month regarding the obvious and well-proven war crimes that Israel is charged for will prepare everyone for the obvious condemnation of those investigated American torturous and genocidal war criminals. It's only a matter of time before this hits the fan. Everyone knows it. In fact, It's also the most logical reason why all those freaking insane maniacs are now pushing so hard for an all-out war.
Linda Belcher, some of those involved in massive U.S. war crimes feel guilty enough about it to disclose the truth to the public. Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and others. It seems odd that so many feel okay about committing heinous atrocities and then being thanked for serving their country.
And Bob Belcher, once more, if this court was useful, George W. Bush, Tony Blair, and Hillary Clinton would be rotting in jail by now. When motion was made to charge them with war crimes, the Bush and Blair cabal, and if I recall correctly, Cheney, after shooting some senator in the face with shotgun, threatened the court and those which wanted to prosecute them by making some sort of macabre joke about the fact they have their own nukes. A letter in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some messages we received during the show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. We continue with the story of Johnny Moon, a third grader on his way to school on Friday, November 22nd, 1963. Someone woke up very early in the morning and went right to the guns to see they were still there and all right and safe and clean and happy. Someone called someone and talked over a final note that had kept them from sleeping past 3 that morning. Someone else awakened with a smile to think of the cumulative power of all the months of preparations finally coming to fruition. 2 persons worried that all the details were in place and what could possibly go wrong. 1 person woke up at the alarm clock, wondering for a moment where he was, and rolled to the bed table to check departure times once again. Someone else asked someone at the end of breakfast, "What about the children?" "I'm not sure I know what you're talking about," was the only response, before they crumpled white napkins and tossed them along with a couple dollar bills on the plates and went off to meet the plane. Johnny is standing in the doorway facing the grilling of Sister Mark and her 4th grade class for having been caught in church that morning crawling on his stomach trying to find his 15 cents for bowling. Sister turned sideways, half facing Johnny and half her very own class. It was probable she had decided she was prepared to pass sentence. She produced a giant navy blue jar of Noxzema, took out a dab and painfully touched her nose. Johnny looked away for one moment to follow a sound of a pen being clicked like a gun cocked, and the jar disappeared. His eyes began to burn. Sister rubbed her chin, found a pimple, and began fondling it. "The 3rd grade will not be going bowling this week," she declared. "But Sister Mary," Johnny blurted. "I will speak to Sister Michael Mary," she said. "The money will instead be given to the missions." She walked toward Johnny as a gunslinger in the street, certain that his foe has no gun. "Where is your money?" Johnny held up his sweaty gray mitten fist as high as his nose, and opening his hand revealed the dime and pennies like the blackjack and ace. Sister leaned herself into a C as a blue jay over a robin's nest. "You only have 14 cents," she said. "You weren't going bowling anyway. You may return to your room," she said as a titter fever spread through her room. Johnny took one blind step backward as the door slammed, leaving him alone in the hall with the burning bush, the cherry tree, and an unseen dripping faucet. He turned and trudged down the 4th grade hall like a Russian soldier headed home across a million miles of taiga, wondering how he could ever find his own room. It wasn't on this floor. Maybe if he just kept going. He kept going, walking slower as he grew more confused, like Jesus wandering in the desert, smelling water, like a cowboy sniffing the log fires of home. He followed the aroma of brown paper towels and dispenser soap. Hey, you're up, Someone hollered at Johnny, sitting on the ground against the priest's garage, while the rest of his team took their turns kicking. Sister Mark served as a permanent pitcher for both teams today. Sister M&M stayed with the kids in the merry-go-round, monkey bar, swings area. They supposedly rotated, but Mark most often grabbed the kickball game. Mark's cheeks gleamed rosy red. Framing a wide smile, she tied her black shawl around her waist and her black gloves were cut off at the knuckles. She pounded the white ball in her hands. Johnny continued to play in the dirt, messing with the ants, naming them, watching what they did, where they went, who they associated with, while he doodled in the dirt with a stick, making pictures of space alien ships. My favorite Martian little antennas and laser beams. Moses and the burning bushes. Johnny imagined being one of those ants down there, working hard, finding this one twig like it was the golden twig, the twig of all time. Pulling that twig around all day long, thinking there must be something special to be done with this amazing twig, and just looking and looking and nobody telling him nothing. "Who is up?" Sister hollered out, breath puffs hanging in the air above her head like cartoon dialogue boxes. "Who's up? Let's go!" She pointed at Johnny with his behind turned toward her, on his knees with both hands on the bricks, pushing and grabbing to stand, trying to whistle the intro music to the Andy Griffith Show. Johnny found his way up and shuffled up to take his turn at bat. He stepped up to the rubber mat home plate on the blacktop and backed up three long steps. "Come on," someone yelled. "Why does he have to always do that? He just stands against the door. Jeez." Johnny pressed his heels against the white garage door. Sister leaned over, wrapped the ball in her left hand and arm. She shuffled and slid like a bowler. At the end of her release, she flicked her wrist. The ball spun as it headed toward Johnny, clunking toward the ball in his snow boots, buckles clattering. He saw the ball, opened his eyes wide, tucked his tongue into the corner of his mouth. He clenched his hands and extended his arms like a field goal kicker, drew his leg back, and kicked at it just as the ball turned right. Johnny looked up at the pigeon club swooping cool. He held out his arms like a blue whale pigeon. He cracked the small of his back on the blacktop. His sister whipped around and slapped hands with her sycophant first base girl. Ribbons of color shot across Johnny's eyes. He caught his breath and realized where he was. Johnny sat back on his hands, looking out at sister. "Missed it by a mile," someone said. Johnny wanted to play for the Yankees. Here he was sitting on his butt on the playground with Sister Mark chewing confiscated fruit stripe gum, maybe his gum, glaring at him. Just a dumb little kid. While he sat there, Johnny locked eyes with the third baseman, the fourth grade boy who'd given him the 14 cents to find his Mickey Mantle card. "Get up," the boy yelled at Johnny. With her head down, Sister towed the pitcher's rubber-green chalk mark on the blacktop. With one hand, she caught a ball fired back to her from the catcher on Johnny's team. Johnny heard giggling and, "Come on, let's go, let's go. We want a bat, too." Johnny rolled over to push off the stand. He returned to place his heels against the white garage door. "Johnny Moon, come on, Johnny, hit it out here," someone said. Sister coiled into her stance and began her approach. Johnny shuffled past toward the ball. The ball took a screwball turn. Johnny sat on his hands in a haze. The third time, Sister deigned to make giant slow-motion gestures showing that she wasn't doing anything strange with the ball. And Johnny took a giant lunge kick and popped out weakly to the second sacker, wearing a blue plaid skirt, black shoes, white blouse, and bright red button-down sweater. "Moonshot! Not!" Johnny sat down on the blacktop up against the garage. He stretched out his legs with his giant snowshoes pointing straight up. Put up his left hand in front of him like a partial parenthesis, and placed the middle finger of his other hand just inside the parenthesis to show the second base person. Sister Johnny Moon! Sister Mary Michael's fingers in the mouth whistle signaled the end of noon recess. She waved her hand twice, 180 degrees, to tell Sister Mark to stop pitching and help her gather the children to go inside. Sister Mark pounded the ball with both hands on the pavement and pointed to the next girl in line. You're next, to say that girl was the first batter in tomorrow's recess. But it was Friday. By Monday, maybe, well, the girl could only hope Sister Mark would forget whose turn it was. Sister Mark pointed at each of the rubber bases in the home plate and then marched off, tall and straight, dribbling the kickball as she went toward the fourth grade entrance, followed by her sweaty, jabbering class. In the classroom, after the coats and hats and boots were put away and the last of the outside-type stories told, the third-grade boys and girls found their desks and began to steel themselves for what was to come, a whole afternoon of English, arithmetic, and vocabulary. Sister Mary Michael hit her mark in the center of the room in front of the class, between them and the blackboard. At least you got to see out the windows at the grain elevator and the bank and the radio tower. Sister something, the principal, appeared miraculously in the doorway. Her brown robes gracefully just skimmed the floor. She folded her arms at her waist, each arm presumably tucked into the opposite sleeve, where Kleenex and absconded magic markers and matchbox cars were also stored. Sister Mary Michael hustled over like a ball player to a coach. The children fidgeted with feet stretched back, turning around to talk, poking someone in back of them with a pencil and smiling, looking behind with a mirror. It looked like all was silent and serene from a distance, like the earth from the moon, but up close, all were engaged in some sort of activity, surreptitious and not. Johnny messed with his rings. He wished he had enough for all 10 and wondered if Jimmy Purple would take him to the dime store and show him how to cob things. Jimmy said he went down with a winter coat, just messed with something like he was looking it over to buy, and then just pushed it down into his sleeve. He walked out of there with his sleeves full of cool stuff. Pens, gum, markers, ink pads. Johnny wanted a couple more rings. Sister Mary Michael turned toward the class, her head down, her hands folded together. She slid back to the door when Sister Principal something stuck her head back in and held her arm out with a fistful of Kleenex. For the girls, she whispered, and nodded toward the class. Sister Mary Michael found her spot directly under the clock above the chalkboard. It said 12:40. She looked up to the class. She had red, shiny eyes. Her nose was running. She wiped tears away with her wad of Kleenex. The children tried to figure out what was wrong. Maybe some kid in his family had been killed in a car accident. Maybe this morning's mass did not count because of Johnny Moon, and they were all getting venial sins for missing mass on a weekday. Maybe bowling would not be held next month either. But for sure, Sister was crying in public, in class, and they grew nervous, like horses in a barn with a tornado headed their way. Class, girls and boys, she said. She took a deep breath, which they could tell because her robes moved. The president has been shot. Oh, the class sat with eyes and mouths wide open, staring hard at Sister, then to each other. What? What'd she say? The president? The president? Sister fell to her knees on the hardwood floor, found her rosary, crossed herself, and began, In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, each child slid out of their desk to kneel on the right side. Each folded their hands and bowed their head to just touch the tip of their noses with the tip of their index fingers, like expectant young angels at the feet of God's almighty throne. Jimmy Purple slid off the left side of his desk, putting him right next to a girl he liked, and refused to yield. Sister led the class in the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary. She then pulled and pushed herself up by one of the front row desks and stumbled over to her desk. She disappeared behind the statue of St. Michael the Archangel that the other nuns had given her on her last feast day. They heard Dave in the hallway through a crack in the door left by the principal, talking about whether to bring in radios or TVs to the classrooms, where they would get them, whether the cords would reach. "We're all going to die," someone whispered. "There'll be a nuclear war. Nice knowing you." "The communists did it. It's because of the Beatles and Castro." "Oh, brother." "We'll never go to the moon now, so forget that." A girl in the front desk turned and stuck her whole body into the aisle to look at Johnny. "We never were," said someone else. At the same time, the boys and girls realized they would be soon rounded up by Russian soldiers and made to line up in the playground and say there is no God. A boy and a girl shot from their desks and ran to the window to stand on their tiptoes, pull themselves up by the ledge to try to see down into the street and up to the sky. Sister wiped her nose and began to ask them to please return to their seats, then asked if they could see anything. Johnny curled his toes inside his shoes, clenched his hands in a kung fu dinner roll fix. "We choose to go to the moon," Johnny whispered, "and the other things." He couldn't believe he was doing this. "Not because it is easy, but because it is hard." Johnny pushed himself out of his desk to his knees. The children turned their heads into the aisle to see. Johnny flexed his fat hands, placed them flat on the wood floor. With the back of his hand, he swept away some of the dirt and playground mud. He leaned over his hands and stretched back his legs to stand on his tiptoes. He kicked out his legs and shook them out like a sprinter getting ready for a race, the way Coach Isom had showed him. He checked the back of his pants, gave a yank to make sure he didn't moon everyone like he had done once or during exercise with Coach that one day when Coach Isom could be there. He took a deep breath, let himself down. "Johnny Moon can't do a push-up," one of the boys said. Johnny's face glowed reddish red and his hands turned whiter. His arms shook as he brought his nose down to just touch the wooden floor. He exhaled and pushed up. His legs shook. "Not because they're easy, but because they're hard," he said in a rush as he reached the top and held it. Again, Johnny let himself down and pushed himself up, and again, as the other children watched him with their mouths open. Jimmy Purple and Michael Irish plopped to the floor, their joints cracking, and began doing push-ups, their behinds high in the air like cows rising. Sister Mary wiped her eyes with the tail of her headdress, pushed off from her desk, and walked to the front of the room. She stared down at the three boys on the floor. She stretched out her arms and dropped to the floor like a cliff diver, smacking her hands on the tile and began doing push-ups, pausing on one arm to throw her veil out of her eyes. The children flooded the aisles, began kicking each other to have enough room and stepping on each other's hands to have enough room and farting on accident, then on purpose, in order to have enough room to do push-ups. A few minutes later, they all sat in the aisles, breathing hard. Sister Mary Michael sat with her back against the front wall, her legs bent upward, both hands clutching her rosary, staring out the windows at nothing. They heard amplified noise coming from the brown box intercom above the cloakroom. First, they heard messing with papers, a loud thud, a chair scooting and whispering. Then they heard Father's voice and Central Principal something as if they were arguing. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that was Father. Please, silence, that was Sister. And then a couple of frantic whispers back and forth. President John F. Kennedy has died. Let us pray. And the principal began leading them in the rosary. Sister Mary Michael and the children willed themselves again into a kneeling position on the floor and followed along on the Hail Marys. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, Ohio, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another new American Dream radio show. And tonight we were broadcasting from Duluth. And we'll be back in Fort Lauderdale next week. And we hope you'll join us right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Moscow's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, the heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records?